system is flawed and that obstruction of justice is all too commonplace. His show, Short End of the Stick, pokes at this corruption with eloquent style. That's Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Studio B for the Short End of the Stick with the man who should have been elected governor of Arizona, Mike Harris.
That's right here on Revolution Radio.
Free people will never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Praise Capital A and pass the ammunition.
The Restoration Hour with Pastor Eli James.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. This is the Restoration Hour here at freedomslips.com, simulcasting on Eurofolk Radio. And I was just informed that there's huge riots in France, Antifa fighting against white nationalists. Whether they're actually white nationalists yet will be determined. They're white workers who are angry that the government is importing non-whites to take their jobs. So we can see that what we've been telling you for many, many years now, that we in the pro-white movement are experiencing now the rioting in the streets that comes from nothing left to lose. Okay. Nothing left to lose, folks. So white people are starting to demonstrate in the streets because they're losing their jobs. And if they lose their jobs, they lose their homes, they lose their families. And so now white people are getting to the point where they have nothing left to lose, and the wrath of the awakened Saxon is going to become a reality very, very soon as these riots are demonstrating. Of course, going back to Charlottesville, Virginia, they tried to do a very orderly demonstration there, but of course, the ultra-leftists, the pro-Clintonistas in Charlottesville and in the state of Virginia made sure that it turned into a riot. It should not have been a riot because they need to prevent us from having our freedom of speech, from having our say, because the Jew-controlled media is in the business of demonizing any white nationalist of any stripe, of any shade of white nationalism, must be demonized and must not be allowed to be heard by the general public, because the general public might be swayed by facts, might be swayed by the truth. We expect more of this to come. The race war has begun. We have been saying this for several years now, that there will be a race war, and I've been saying it has begun for over a year now, because the race war has been financed by the Rothschilds and their agent George Soros and their Freemasonic cult, including the Clintonistas and the Bushes and Barack Obama, the Judeo-communist cult that is paid for by the Rothschilds, etc. So we are seeing, folks, in this world, a culmination. A culmination. The anticipated fight between white nationalists and Jewish supremacists. The fight between white nationalists and Jewish supremacists. We're going to try a quick test of the phone line. As you probably know, we've been having difficulty getting callers integrated into the show. And so we have made a couple of changes. And we are going to try a call within the next few minutes. But today, I'm going to suspend calls until we have determined that these calls will go through. For some reason, it's become a problem ever since Revolution Radio gave up its own call-in numbers, and we had to switch to our own. And for some reason, it just won't integrate with Revolution Radio when we're on Skype here. But today's subject is going to be a continuation of our topics on the Civil War. Today, we're going to be talking about Albert Pike and his role, his major role. Again, here we have, as we just finished a couple of studies about Judah B. Benjamin, the big Jew of the Confederacy. And previous to that, we talked about Northerners who were conspirators with the Rothschilds in provoking the North into a civil war and actually provoking disunion. It's very unusual for a mainstream historian, magazine, etc., to talk about the fact that the radical abolitionists were also disunionists. And this only makes sense from the fact that the Rothschilds were provoking both sides to disrupt the United States of America and turn it into two countries. And one country could always be pitted against the other by the Rothschilds. And without this international perspective on the creation and management of the Civil War, you simply have no understanding of the behind-the-scenes true reasons for the Civil War. So all mainstream history is garbage, absolute garbage. You might as well throw, if it's published by a mainstream publisher, throw it away. It's worthless. You should just get your books and your information from alternative, especially conspiratorial sources. There's all kinds of publishers out there that publish conspiracy books. And then you can read the conspiracy books, which typically point to Jewish skullduggery behind the scenes. The vast majority of conspiracy books do talk about the Rothschilds and Judaism and how the Jews in general have militated against white Christian civilization, have tried to subvert it, and that's why the Jews have been kicked out of over 100 countries throughout history, because all they ever do is enter our nations in order to subvert us. This is becoming common knowledge. The Jews even admit that they have been tossed out of over 100 countries throughout history. But they explain it away by saying, oh, there's this natural antipathy by white people against Jews. Well, if that's the case, why do white people ever let them in the first place? That's obviously a nonsensical explanation. The fact is, because the Jews are so subversive and have never attempted to integrate themselves into white society or any society for that matter, they have always been a parasitic entity. And various nations, they've done well with Islam. Islam has restricted their access to power, so they have integrated well in Islamic countries, but nowhere else. So, okay, there's a call coming in. We'll see if we can add this call. Hello, Michael, are you there?
Yes, how are you, Eli?
Very good. Okay, are you in France at the moment?
Yeah, well, I just left Switzerland at CERN.
Okay. Oh, what's going on at CERN? Anything unusual? Vibes?
Well, I met up with this Norwegian family, and the son works there, and he offered me a tour, a private tour, and I went into the belly of the beast.
Right.
So I got a lot to report if you're interested, okay.
Okay. Make it brief. We got actually another caller coming in just now. Give us a rundown. A quick rundown.
Well, I just went in there and checked everything out, took many pictures, and just, tried to understand what it's all about. And, I've already done the research, but I wanted to know firsthand from all the different people. And basically, it's Scientology. It's a religion. These people are just, I got it all figured out.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, because we know about the goddess Kali statue that they have in front of CERN, which is kind of odd for a scientific establishment, right?
Oh, are you talking about Shiva?
Oh, Shiva. Right. Right.
Yeah. Right. The God of destruction.
Right. Yeah, that's really odd for them to have the God of Destruction at the entrance of CERN. What's that all about?
Well, I talked to this Norwegian fellow who's who works there, and I tried to tell him. I said, "Don't you understand that this antimatter, if you get any closer to opening it up, which they've already done a little, I said, don't you understand what's going to happen?" And I tried to explain, but these people don't understand that. They work there because their country sends money to, and they're involved, you know, 22 countries, and they work there and they get paid tremendous salaries. They need a job. And like this one particular fellow, you know, dreamed about CERN from, you know, 5 years old, and that's all he thought about. So, and of course, these people don't believe in Yahweh or anything like that. They believe in man-made science. So, you know,
sure.
Anyway, so, I didn't throw any pearls to anything. I just kind of, you know, got a lot of good information and, you know, left them with, you know, how I felt about it, but, you know.
Right. Okay. But it's, so there's no consciousness by the average worker there that they're really trying to tap into other dimensions and possibly loose evil spirits upon the world, or negative energies on the world.
Well, as you know, the European Union was created by you know who.
Yeah, you know who.
And then of course back in the '50s, the European Union people got together and developed this because of all the scientists that were leaving America. And they began this operation in the '50s, and they started all this, and they claim that they do a lot of research so that they can use this research in medicine and healing and such, but
right.
I think the majority of these people who work there don't understand exactly what's going on. And I think it's all another one of those big lies that we've been,
sure. You know, sure.
So
a few years back when CERN actually got underway, we reported that CERN was actually being used in a similar fashion to HAARP. And it was controlled energy that could be used to, you know, modify weather. And in the early days, it was actually used to crash a plane. You may remember that incident.
That's what I tried to explain to several of these folks, but they called me a conspiracy theorist. I said, no. I'm a conspiracy analyst.
Yeah, right.
But very anyway, good. I did find out why CERN is underground.
Okay.
And it makes sense. Can you imagine if the corporation of CERN bought up all the property in that 17-mile, you know, circle? If they bought up all that expensive property, it's cheaper. It was cheaper to put it underground, and then they could sell the rocks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I understand.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I understand. It's a huge complex. We have a similar accelerator here in Illinois. I think it's called Fermilab. And
right.
They have like a nature reserve above ground. And, you know, there's no homes. There's office buildings, but there's no homes on the grounds. I imagine the radiation caused when this thing is fired up is not very healthy. You know, did your scientist friend have any concerns about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, when we went into the belly of the beast, we had to have radiation monitors on and all this stuff because we didn't get the usual tour. There were people coming in there from schools and different things, you know, on tour, but we got a very special private tour.
Oh, okay.
And I was very fortunate to be able to, since I was in the area, I went ahead and did it because, just for the curiosity, you know.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, I tell you what, maybe we can discuss this on a future show. But thanks for calling in. It proves that our call-in number is finally working. Grateful for that, because we've been having difficulty the last 3 or 4 weeks. So, Michael, thanks for calling in. And
yeah, I'm just, giving us just a report. calling in, giving you a report. I've been listening to you the whole time I've been, in my little motorhome thing, going around checking things out, you know. So
right, yeah, you're our man on the street. Yeah, well, actually, we're trying to at this point at Eurofolk Radio go multilingual in all the Eurofolk languages. And are you fluent in French or any other language or Russian or anything like that?
Russian, and I'm approaching the level of French.
Okay. Yeah, because we'd like to have native speaking speakers in these various countries, So, but I'll get in touch with you about that personally. Okay.
Okay, just wanted to say hi and Yahweh bless and check in on you and see what's going on.
Yeah, it's there's fighting in the streets, bro. Fighting in the streets.
It is. It really is. It's getting bad.
That's right. Okay, Michael, thanks for calling.
Okay, take care. Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless. All right, folks. So, again, for anybody who else wants to call in, it looks like our the changes we've made in hosting this program do seem to be working. And the call-in number is 312-957-6104. I'll repeat that. 312-957-6104. And I'm going to get into the subject back into the Civil War. Today's subject is going to be primarily Albert Pike. But first, I want to address the subject of tariffs, because we know that the neo-Confederates have made a really big deal out of the South having to pay all these tariffs, the tariff of abominations and all that stuff. But that argument that the South was unusually impacted by tariffs, I maintain, is false, because that does not take into account the fact that those who pay the tariffs simply pass on the prices, just like any tax. That if you do business, like cigarettes is a perfect example. In the Chicago area, cigarettes can sell for up to $15 a pack. Most of that is tax. And cigarette smokers pay it, So when they really are in need, otherwise they will buy cigarettes by mail or have their friends and relatives bring them from Indiana, where they're much cheaper in Indiana, nearly half price, because the state of Indiana doesn't tax nearly as badly as both Illinois and Chicago do. So it's the merchants who pay this, and ultimately the consumers who pay this. So. And the fact is that the big slaveholding Southerners were millionaires. They were millionaires. And for them, these tariffs meant really nothing. Let me just give you from this chart here. This is from Wealth and Culture in the South, Slavery and the White Class Structure. And there's a pie chart here where it says 76.1% of the whites in the South were non-slaveholders, owned no slaves whatsoever. So this puts to rest the myth promoted by the neo-abolitionists that every white is a slaveholder, and therefore every white person 150 years later owes reparations to blacks. Well, certainly. And that, and the vast majority of Northerners were non-slaveholders. So why should any white person accept the direct descendants? I mean, if we're going to put blame on anybody, it would be the direct descendants of the slaveholders and nobody else. Okay. All you reparations advocates, your argument makes absolutely no sense. And plus, the children of a person who has committed a crime cannot be found guilty for a crime committed by their parents. The reparations argument is utterly racist. It's totally racist. And it's unjust and unfair. But nevertheless, this is what blacks and Jews are have been arguing for the longest time. Now, slaveholders with 1 to 9 slaves made up 17.2%. Slaveholders with 10 to 99 slaves made up 6.6%. And slaveholders with more than 100 slaves made up 0.1%. 0.1%. So one in 1,000 Southerners owned 100 slaves or more. So you're talking a very, very minute percentage of the slaveocracy of the South actually holding slaves. And of course, the neo-abolitionist propaganda would have you believe that everybody, every white person owned a slave, every white slave owner abused their slaves and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is that blacks under slavery in the South were far better off. They had 3 hots and a cot compared to their native black brethren in Africa who were lion meat, and their lifespan was probably less than half of the lifespan of an American slave, that these facts are totally ignored by the neo-abolitionists because they want to paint as bad a picture as possible of whitey then and now, when all of these fictitious arguments coming from the left and from Black Lives Matter and from the Jews, and the fact is the Jews never talk about the most horrific portion of slavery was the capturing and shipping of slaves from Africa to America, and this was totally overseen by Jews. The most horrific period of any slave's life was being captured and shipped across the Atlantic Ocean by these Jewish ship owners. The transatlantic shipping of slaves was totally controlled by Jews, and therefore all these people who are begging for reparations need to go to Chase Manhattan, Solomon Brothers, the Rothschilds, and the other Jew bankers who are the descendants of the slave-holding Jews. Okay, this is what really needs to happen. You need to get a true perspective. The fact of the matter is, Jewish involvement in slavery has been written out of the history books, totally written out of the history books. And the best source of information on this subject is the secret relationship between blacks and Jews by the Nation of Islam. All right, we have another call coming in, and we're hoping that this connects. It's looking good so far. So the Nation of Islam, the secret relationship between blacks and Jews details the Jewish connection to the slave trade in America. All right. Okay. This call did not connect. So let me try bringing the caller in. Here we go. Let's see if this works. Okay. The caller is trying again. Now it's amazing. The call from Michael worked, and this one doesn't want to work. Okay, I'm going to quickly talk with the caller, and so I'm going to be going off air momentarily. Okay, we're back live with the Studio A at Revolution Radio, and I need to make sure that we are. And I'm going to try to bring the caller in and see if we get connected this way. So the connection is iffy at best. And it's just too bad because I really want to take calls, and because many of these callers have information that really you can't get, you know, because a lot of these people called from Charlottesville and gave us firsthand information about what was going on there, and it sounds like, well, we're just not have no explanation for it, folks. The first call connected with no problem, and this call is not connecting. And so we'll just have to continue with today's subject. I'm about to give up on taking calls altogether because it's just not working. So anyway, from an article entitled Dead Confederates, a Civil War Era Blog, visualizing tariff revenues. Earlier today, my Austin colleague Eric Calistri shared a link to an Excel spreadsheet distributed by the Economic History Association that detailed gross revenues, expenses, and net revenues for ports of entry around the United States in the late 1850s. The data is abstracted from a report from the Secretary of the Treasury to the 36th Congress, first session, Senate Executive Document Number 33. To help visualize that, I've taken the gross revenue for the selected ports for fiscal year 1859 and shown how those various ports stack up against one another. Okay, so here are the revenues paid at various ports of entry in America prior to the Civil War. This is 1859. Boston and Charlestown, Massachusetts. Now remember, these revenues were paid by merchants, not by states. These revenues were paid by the merchants when the imports came in. Boston and Charlestown, $5,133,415. So you can see that Massachusetts, the citizens of Massachusetts, or the merchants of Massachusetts, paid over $5 million in import duties. New York, $35,155,453. So you've got $40 million paid by those two states. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, $2,262,350. Baltimore, $1 million. Norfolk and Portsmouth, Virginia, $70,898. So you've got these four northern cities which have paid duties, tariffs, in the millions. We're talking about $45 million. $43 million of Massachusetts, New York, Pennsylvania, and Maryland, and Virginia paid a sparse $70,000. Wilmington, North Carolina, $33,000. Charleston, South Carolina, $299,000. Savannah, Georgia, $89,000. Mobile, Alabama, $118,000. Key West, Florida, $7,600. New Orleans, Louisiana, which was the big one, $2,120,000. Galveston, Texas, $92,000. Detroit, Michigan, $57,000. Yeah, because of the trade going up the St. Lawrence Seaway. Chicago, Illinois, $24,000. San Francisco, California, $1,350,000. So you can see from these statistics that the overwhelming majority of the tariffs were paid by Northerners, not by Southerners at all. So how in the world can the slaveocracy of the South, and specifically John C. Calhoun, complain so mightily? Well, Charleston, South Carolina paid $300,000 in tariffs just before the Civil War, compared to $5 million in Massachusetts, $35 million in New York, $2 million in PA, $1 million in Maryland, and San Francisco, $1.5 million. So this is a paltry sum paid by merchants in the South, absolutely paltry in comparison to the tariffs paid by merchants in the North. I've been telling you that this high tariff argument by the neo-Confederates is bunk. It's absolute bunk. And as I've been saying all along, if you know anything about economics, then the cost of the items are always passed on to the consumer, and the South had no problem selling its cotton. There were a couple of busts, not to be blamed on tariffs at all, but to be blamed on the weather and on the economic conditions overseas as well. Because if the buyer, usually in the case of the South, the purchaser was either Britain or France. They were the main purchasers. So if there was a bust, it was usually to be blamed on the bankers, not on tariffs. You can see very easily that tariffs were so paltry in the South that they were a non-factor. Recall that Professor Williams said that the Southern ports paid 75% of tariffs in 1859. Sure doesn't look like it to me. All right, Professor Williams is a neo-Confederate. So these neo-Confederate arguments that the Civil War was not about slavery, but was about tariffs and states' rights is absolute bunk. It's absolute bunk. I have proven conclusively that the South seceded because of slavery in order to perpetuate slavery, and most of the secession statements don't even mention tariffs because tariffs were so insignificant they hardly even mattered, as this chart and these statistics absolutely prove. So the author says, oh, well, this neo-Confederate doesn't look like this is a true statement by Professor Williams. Tariff revenues at New Orleans are similar to those at Philadelphia, but no other southern port comes anywhere close. Even the second southern port, Charleston, is only about a tenth the size. So we see here that this argument that tariffs were the major reason for the South seceding is just absolute bunk. The South had virtually no tax burden compared to what was paid in the North. Okay, now one commenter says, on the other hand, I imagine that manufacturers in the North were unhappy that tariffs on raw materials produced in the South kept the prices they paid artificially high too. If you're a distiller in New England who needs large quantities of raw sugar, you're not going to be happy with a 24% tariff on that product coming from the West Indies or with buying it from some planter in Texas or Louisiana who's upped his prices accordingly. Okay, so tariffs cut both ways, folks. The idea that the South was disproportionately burdened by tariffs is absolute nonsense. Another commenter. The chart shows tariff revenue, not end consumers. I'm aware that many ports ended up in southern states. The claim by Williams and others was that southern ports collected the overwhelming majority of the tariffs and thus generated the overwhelming majority of federal revenue. It is simply not true. It is simply not true. The simplistic arguments given by the neo-Confederates are doing nothing but perpetuating the animosity of the Civil War, and they need to get a grip and they need to start talking honestly about the true causes of the Civil War and this blame Lincoln and blame the North mentality being promoted by the neo-Confederates is a deliberate ruse, in my opinion, whether they're consciously or unconsciously playing the Rothschild game of divide and conquer, carrying it out 150 years later. This has to end. Because you're not going to convert anybody to your cause by telling these humongous lies. You're not going to convert anybody to your cause by telling these lies. I mean, these are childish lies being told by the neo-Confederates. And they need to stop doing it. And if you want to save the white race, which I'm not convinced that's what their intention is, I'm not convinced at all that they are really white nationalists. I think they merely want to perpetuate whatever, you know, their status is vis-a-vis blacks and other non-whites and vis-a-vis other whites as well. I'm not convinced that they're truly white nationalists. So all they are is revisionists, historical revisionists, perpetuating this false view of the Civil War and the false view of the reasons for it. So we got to get down to brass tacks here. We got to get to the facts and not keep perpetuating these childish lies that the Civil War was not about slavery. Certainly it was about slavery for the South. The slaveocracy had every intention of perpetuating slavery ad infinitum. And the North was concerned that this Southern economy based on slavery would become, it was already aggressive. I've revealed to you the fact that the slaveocracy had invaded many federal forts and other military installations, at least one Navy yard, and stolen money from federal facilities to the millions of dollars before the Civil War. It's very clear that the slaveocracy was the aggressor. It was a war of Southern aggression. The North simply reacted to Southern aggression. And I proved to you that Jefferson Davis was the one who gave the call on Fort Sumter after Abraham Lincoln tried to prevent the attack. Clearly, the South was the aggressor. And the reason why it was the aggressor was because the South was trying to perpetuate slavery. Now, it's this 0.1%, and maybe the 6.6% of the yeomen who had slaves, less than 100 slaves apiece. Maybe these people, these were the power, the string pullers in the Southern economy, in the Southern society. So it was no more than 10% of the Southern society was really pro-slavery to the point where they were making huge economic gains. And of course, these people were millionaires because they had so many slaves and had so much property. And these slaves were worth a lot of money. That's why they took care of them. They're not going to abuse a farmhand, right, that they need for production. They're not going to abuse their farmhands. They only did so in extreme situations where the black refused to work because there's a lot of malingering going on. Believe me, there was a lot of malingering going on. Of course, because the black slaves didn't want to be slaves. They didn't want to be used in this fashion. So, but the problem was, you know, well, if we let our black slaves go, what happens to them? Well, in Virginia, they found out that, they just let them go. They just put them out on the streets where they couldn't get jobs. So they wandered, you know, north where they possibly could get jobs, thus creating a race problem of, let's call it the dumping factor, which caused a race problem. And the Northerners, most Northerners resented this dumping of blacks north. And the Virginia and North Carolina, and I think also Maryland, the eastern states, they had used up the land. The land no longer would produce these cash crops. And so their wealth was actually contained in the slaves themselves. So there's the expression sold south. Many of these slaves who were no longer useful in Virginia were sold to new plantations in the South or in the West, such as Texas and Mississippi and Louisiana. So these slaves retained their value as long as they could be sold south and be put to work on bigger plantations, on productive plantations. So what to do with these no longer productive blacks was a serious problem. It was a serious problem in the South. As I have reported to you from Abraham Lincoln's speech on the Dred Scott decision, the state of Virginia by itself had more mulattoes than the entire North put together. So this problem of mulatto creation was a real blot on the slaveocracy. A supposedly white supremacist group producing all these half-breeds. There's something wrong here, folks, because they obviously were putting their economic considerations and personal lust before the health of the society. The Bible tells us we are not to integrate, yet this was going on virtually all plantations, as reported by the Northern troops when they entered these plantations. And they reported, number one, they reported on a number of mulattoes. They had the categories of, quadroons, half-breeds, quadroons, and I forget, I think it went up to 1/16. White blood. And so they actually had words for these categories of mulatto. So this was very common in the South. And Jefferson Davis even himself had adopted, at least temporarily, a black boy that was being brought up in his household. So the Bible tells us we're not supposed to integrate and we're not supposed to live among non-whites. So the South was violating biblical law hand over fist, but they were actually claiming the Bible as their source for legitimizing slavery. But these were false arguments based on the fact that the Bible does not condone chattel slavery whatsoever. There was no such thing as chattel slavery in the Old Testament. There was indentured servitude, and this was almost always for actually the care and consideration of the poor who could not make their own way through life, so they quote-unquote sold themselves, but it's more proper to say they hired themselves out as servants to a wealthier family. And the other category was convicted criminals, because there are only two forms of punishment in the Old Testament. That was death or compensation. So if you were a convicted criminal, then you had to hire yourself out to pay and make compensation for your crime. There was no such thing as prisons. Okay? So either you were put to death for your crimes, or you had some kind of oversight as a hired hand until you were able to make good on the crime that you committed. Compensation. Under no circumstances were any non-whites or even non-Israelites, although may have been, dispersed Israelites from dispersed Israelite nations that had committed crimes against Israelites in their home territory, who were treated in such a fashion as indentured servants. But chattel slavery was out of the question, especially considering the fact that every seventh year, these hired hands were allowed to go home, and every 49th year, they were totally set free forever. There was no such circumstance in the antebellum South. You are listening to the Restoration Hour here at freedomslips.com, and wow, times are really getting serious, folks. Times are getting serious, and we're in a situation where if we don't defend ourselves, if we white people don't defend ourselves from the perfidious Jew and the proxy armies that the Jew has hired, such as Black Lives Matter and Antifa, with George Soros being the bag man, doling out the money with his various foundations, the bag man for the Rothschilds, to ethnically cleanse the white race off the face of the earth. If you don't understand that this is what's going on, then you are sorely, sorely misinformed. As Mark Twain said, if you don't read the newspapers, you're uninformed. If you read the newspapers, you are misinformed. And that's still true today. That's why we have alternative media or independent media, pro-white media, which is being censored as much as possible by the global supremacist Jew. So we need your contributions. So feel free to go over to www.freedomslips.com, click on the donate button. Our donate button at Your Folk Radio has been canceled by PayPal, so you can't do that right now. We'll find an alternative sooner or later. We're not in this to make money. Neither is freedomslips.com in this to make money. We're in this to broadcast factual information, and you can do with it as you choose. But if you don't consider both sides of any argument, then you are doing yourself and any victims of this anti-white genocide harm. You need to understand what's really going on and stop believing the Jew lies, the globalist media of the international Jew, which includes ABC, NBC, CBS, and all the rest of them, all the rest, the magazines, Hollywood. They control all media, and they control all universities and publishing. So the only way you can counter Jew propaganda is by going to conspiratorial literature and by listening to radio shows such as this, the Restoration Hour, which gives you a different perspective. You will not get the truth. You will not get facts, for example, about the Civil War from mainstream media. This magazine, this mainstream magazine called History, has been selling me free issues to get me to subscribe. And, you know, I've taught on the Boxer Rebellion and how the Opium Wars, more specifically, and how Jews primarily instigated the selling of opium to the Chinese people. And when the Chinese emperor and later the Dowager Empress complained that foreigners had come in and started selling dope to Chinese people and getting hooked on opium, they sent in the troops. The British sent in, thanks to the Rothschilds, sent in troops to take over the country. They simply invaded China so that the Jews could continue to sell opium to the Chinese people. And then there were various Americans involved, namely Skull and Bonesmen, who were involved in the opium trade in China as well. I did a whole show about that. But here in this magazine, quote unquote, called History, about the Boxer Rebellion, here's what they have to say. In June 1900, a Chinese secret organization led a violent uprising in North China, killing foreigners and Chinese Christians in a move against the growing Western and Japanese influence and presence in the country. Not a word said about British and American selling of opium to the Chinese and getting them all hooked on dope. Next heading, who were the rebels? The group behind the rebellion was a Society of the Righteous and Harmonious Fists, who were believed to be an offshoot of the Eight Trigram Society, which had organized rebellions against the Qing Dynasty during the 18th and 19th centuries. Anti-foreign and anti-colonial and anti-Christian, the movement was mostly made up of peasants, many of whom came from the Shandong province, which had seen a great deal of famine and flooding. Their poor standard of living, so society believed, was due to the influx of foreigners to China. Well, yeah! The influx of dope peddlers. They don't mention in one sentence of this full one-page article that all this was precipitated by a military invasion of China in order to promote the selling of opium. Not once do they mention this in this quote-unquote history magazine. Just shows you what utterly worthless mainstream media is. It's garbage. It's all digested, pre-digested Jewish snot. That's what it is. Hogwash. Jewish hogwash. Not one detail about the totally imperialistic invasion of China by the British and the Americans under their secret societies and their Jew banks. Not one word. So you can see how worthless mainstream news is. It's all fake, folks. It's all totally fake. All right, now let's get to Albert Pike. About Albert Pike. Albert Pike was born on December 29, 1809 in Boston and was the oldest of six children born to Benjamin and Sarah Andrews Pike. He studied at Harvard and later served as Brigadier General in the Confederate Army. And Judah B. Benjamin, I believe, went to Yale. Whether or not they were known to each other before both of them moved to New Orleans, I'm not sure. Haven't gotten that detail. But certainly, Pike, Benjamin, and Slidell got together in New Orleans as part of the Skull and Bone Society, created the Mystic Crew of Comus, another secret society, but simply a branch of Skull and Bones, in which they fomented secession in the South. That was their job, to foment secession. And I detailed the career of Judah B. Benjamin in the last two episodes and his major, and the fact that very little is said in mainstream history books about Judah P. Benjamin. Almost nothing. Almost nothing. Despite the fact that his picture appeared on Confederate notes and on Confederate bonds. The average person has never even heard of Judah P. Benjamin, despite the fact that he was probably the most powerful man in the South, even more powerful than Jefferson Davis, because he was the guy in charge of the purse strings. He was direct agent of the Rothschilds. So he could direct the flow of the Civil War as he pleased to maximize the number of white people slaughtered on the battlefield, as I demonstrated last time. After the Civil War, Pike was found guilty of treason and jailed, only to be pardoned by fellow Freemason President Andrew Johnson on April 22, 1866, who met with him the next day at the White House. On June 20, 1867, Scottish Rite officials conferred upon Johnson the 4th to the 32nd Freemasonry degrees, and he later went to Boston to dedicate a Masonic temple. So here's a suggestion, and there were many Freemasons throughout the North and the South. Johnson was actually a Southerner from Tennessee, but he was not a slave owner, and he detested slavery, and he detested slave owners, okay? He considered them to be arrogant and snobbish aristocrats, and he detested them for that reason. But it's very common for people to be Freemasons in those days. Now, whether you were a subversive Freemason or whether you were a run-of-the-mill Freemason who just went to the lodge to have a few beers and talk politics, that's another matter. But the fact that they state that he was only a third-degree Freemason up until 1867 suggests to me that he was a very low-ranking Freemason, and he was probably pressured to pardon Pike. He may have been threatened with assassination if he didn't do so, because this is how the Freemasons work. You don't know what you're getting into when you join Freemasonry. You may be in there for 20 years and not have to do anything illegal, but there may come a time where they need your services to perform an illegal act. And I would certainly put this in the category of a treasonous act, pardoning Albert Pike. But this was certainly after all of the controversy of Reconstruction, where Johnson tried his best to carry out the plans of Abraham Lincoln, namely to liberate the slaves, get them off of American soil, and restore the southern states to white rule. That was Abraham Lincoln's plan. And Andrew Johnson did his best to carry that out. That's why the Northern abolitionists had him impeached, because he didn't want the anti-white version of Reconstruction that the abolitionists, who were also, as I've been telling you, controlled by the Rothschilds, that the abolitionists wanted to happen, which was ultimately implemented. And this is also why Abraham Lincoln had to be assassinated, because the Jews, the Rothschilds especially, and their secret societies, the B'nai B'rith, the Freemasons, and the Knights of the Golden Circle, they wanted Lincoln dead. So there were Northerners who wanted Lincoln dead because he didn't want to make blacks citizens. He wanted to ship them out of the country. And there were Southerners who wanted Lincoln dead because of the Civil War. Okay, the animosity over the Civil War had boiled over because of 4 years of strife. So here we see that Pike was pardoned by Johnson, and it was probably for his health that he pardoned Pike. Pike was said to be a genius, able to read and write in 16 different languages, although I cannot find a record anywhere of what those languages were. In addition, he is widely accused of plagiarism, so take with a pinch of salt. At various stages of his life, he was a poet, philosopher, frontiersman, soldier, humanitarian, and philanthropist. The Freemasons and Jews love to call themselves humanitarians and philanthropists, even though he was a Satanist. Right? And so are the Rothschilds. A 33rd degree Mason, he was one of the founding fathers and head of the ancient accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, being the Grand Commander of North American Freemasonry from 1859 and retained that position until his death in 1891. In 1869, he was a top leader in the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. All right, so this was later, okay, after the formation of the Ku Klux Klan, right after the Civil War, by a ragtag band of people.
Mr. Rowe, I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time, that's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, 6 to 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are your hosts, Pamela
and Claire, on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Featuring the public law trust Lyme disease
and astrology. Witnessing those who harm and holding them accountable.
Guess what? No more secrets. It's about time we snap out of it. This corporate government is a house of cards falling in on itself. The public law. Do no harm.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio.
Divine Truth every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time with Taj, Sarah Adams and Nissen Norton. We present a genuine and authentic show with discussions and interviews with the people that matter in the alternative community. We ask the questions that nobody else will ask to the greatest minds of the alternative community every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com in Studio A. We talk about everything from the Illuminati to the secret space program, multidimensional warfare, aliens and UFOs, mind control and sacred hidden knowledge, the divine truth, exposing the truth without the fear every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, welcome back, folks. This is the Restoration Hour. Pastor Eli James, your host. And I've had to change settings. I didn't realize that the caller, Michael, was a Skype call. And so my elation over taking a call was not by phone. So the phone calls still are not working correctly. So we'll just keep on working on it until we get it right. Eventually, I'll be able to take phone calls. But as it is, I'm just going to continue muddling through. And I've just been informed that the Knights of the KKK did not come into being until the 1900s. Remember, I told you there were three stages of the Ku Klux Klan. And the initial stage had nothing to do with Freemasonry whatsoever. It was simply a local reaction to Reconstruction. And then when it merged with the associated, that's merging is too strong a word. When it began associating with Freemasonry, that was later. And I'd have to do real deep research to find out when that happened. And it was probably much later than this author states. He states it was 1867. I doubt it was that soon. I really doubt it was that soon. So, folks, let's continue. This is about Albert Pike from Three World Wars. That's the website, Three World Wars. Pike was said to be a Satanist who indulged in the occult. Well, he admitted it. he said, Freemasons, we Freemasons worship Lucifer. A Satanist who indulged in the occult, and he apparently possessed a bracelet which he used to summon Lucifer, with whom he had constant communication. All right, well, is that a Satanist or not? Whether it's real or not, that's a Satanist, folks. He was the Grand Master of a Luciferian group known as the Order of the Palladium, or Sovereign Council of Wisdom, occult wisdom, which had been founded in Paris in 1737. Very interesting. I bet the French Rothschilds, the Paris Rothschilds, had something to do with that. Palladism had been brought to Greece from Egypt by Pythagoras in the 5th century, and it was this cult of Satan that was introduced to the inner circle of the Masonic lodges. Here, Gnosticism. Gnosticism is a broad term for any variation of, ancient wisdom that comes down the pike. So it could include Satanism, but the vast majority of Gnostics were not Satanists. When Gnosticism bloomed in the early centuries of Christianity, Gnosticism was an attempt to merge existing philosophies and theologies with Christianity. Not all of these were evil, but certainly this would be, because this is a secret society which has always been at odds with general society, certainly at odds with Christianity. So whatever its source, it was exploited by the Rothschilds and other Jews, wealthy Jews, who got together to exploit Freemasonry and other secret societies to bend them to their will, willingly or unwillingly, and usually it's unwillingly. by compromising people, by catching them in the act with prostitutes or setting them up with prostitutes, right? And having witnesses that can testify against them. And from that moment forward, they're compromised. And the Jews can bend them to their will. So this cult of Palladium was aligned with the Palladium of the Templars. In 1801, Isaac Long, a Jew, brought a statue of Baphomet to Charleston, South Carolina, where he helped to establish the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. Okay, so I've been telling you, the Jews established Freemasonry here in America. Here's more proof. And names. Isaac Long, a Jew, and remember, B'nai B'rith had a chapter, the second American chapter, in Charleston, South Carolina. And Charleston, South Carolina was chosen. Why? Well, let's get into it. Charleston, South Carolina, where he helped establish the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. Long apparently chose Charleston because it was geographically located on the 33rd parallel of latitude. Incidentally, so is Baghdad. And this council is considered to be the mother supreme council of all Masonic lodges in the world. Imagine that. Why was Charleston, South Carolina, the hotbed of secession? It should be obvious to you now. By the way, Mount Hermon is also on the 33rd degree parallel, and that's where the fallen angels descended from heaven and began intermarrying with Adamic women. That's why the 33rd degree parallel is so important to the Jews and to the Freemasons. Pike was Long's successor, and he changed the name of the order to the New and Reformed Palladian Rite, or Reformed Palladium. The order contained two degrees, Adelph, or brother, interesting they used the Greek Adelphos, companion of Ulysses, or companion of Penelope. Pike's right-hand man was Phileas Walder from Switzerland, who was a former Lutheran minister, a Masonic leader, occultist, and spiritualist. Pike also worked closely with Giuseppe Mazzini, communist, under the direct employment of the Rothschilds of Italy, who also was a 33rd degree Mason, who became head of the Illuminati in 1834, and who founded the Mafia in 1860. Actually, the Mafia is older than that, but he maybe reorganized it under the Illuminati. Together with Mazzini, Lord Henry Palmerston of England, 33rd degree Mason, and Otto von Bismarck from Germany, also a 33rd degree Mason. Albert Pike intended to use the Palladian Rite to create a satanic umbrella group that would tie all Masonic groups together. Of course, that's what the Illuminati was all about. So you have various degrees of leadership with the Rothschild banking family at the very top, the Illuminati, and their operatives such as Mazzini, Pike, and various lists of heads of the Illuminati. I have here a list compiled of the various heads of the Illuminati. First, it was Weishaupt, who was directly paid and employed by Meyer Amschel Rothschild, the daddy of the five brothers. Weishaupt was succeeded by Mazzini, who was succeeded by Pike, succeeded by Lemmy, succeeded by Lenin, succeeded by Trotsky, succeeded by Stalin. Here's the order of leadership of the Illuminati, folks. You're not going to get this information from mainstream media or from any Jewish publication. You have to dig for this information. It's not going to be made public by the conspirators. Albert Pike died on April 2nd, 1891, and was buried in Oak Hill Cemetery, although the corpse of Pike currently lies in the headquarters of the Council of the 33rd Degree of the Scottish Rite of Masonry in Washington, D.C. Now remember, his statue exists right there in Washington, D.C., and it remains to be seen whether George Soros and Black Lives Matter and Antifa are going to tear down the statue of their leader. Their leader, Albert Pike. They're tearing down the statues of lesser Confederates. But Albert Pike was the head of Freemasonry during the Civil War, a self-avowed Satanist, and leader of Freemasonry. So how long is that statue going to stand? Well, you know, the Freemasons are going to defend it to the last minute. And I understand there's other statues of Albert Pike around the country. And I wonder if they're going to be touched, you know, because you're getting at the heart of Freemasonry when you start talking about Albert Pike. The Freemasons and the Jews do not want you to know about Albert Pike and his connection to the Illuminati. So, therefore, they're going to avoid tearing that statue down because they don't want any public discussion of it. Period. They want no discussion whatsoever. But yours truly, I am not going to stop talking about Jewish subversion of white Christian civilization. I will never stop talking about it. They're going to have to sue me or kill me, one or the other. By the way, more and more Judeo-Christian groups are now suing the SPLC and the ADL for slander over their recent blacklist of so-called white supremacist organizations, right? I don't think Coral Ridge Ministries is a white supremacist organization. They're going to, I plead guilty. But Coral Ridge Ministries is not a white supremacist organization. But because they oppose the liberal agenda, that is the Jewish agenda, they're going to smear anybody who opposes them. And now they're going to be hit with lawsuits. The more lawsuits, the better. The Bible says the Adamic race is to have dominion. This is not our choice. This is what Yahweh wants us to do by our talents and by our creativity, by our work ethic. We are to regulate the world, rule the world. That's what the Bible says. But the Jews, being the children of the devil, want to destroy the white race precisely because they know we are the real Israelites and because dominion was promised to us through Yahshua Messiah. We're going to rule the world with Yahshua Messiah as the king forever. So the battle is between true Israel, that is Caucasian Israel, and our king Yahshua versus the Jews. And who's their king? Albert Pike died on April 2nd, 1891, and was buried in Oak Hill Cemetery, although the corpse of Pike currently lies in the headquarters of the Council of the 33rd Degree of Scottish Rite Freemasonry in Washington, D.C., apparently right under that statue. See The Deadly Deception by Jim Shaw, former 33rd Degree Mason and past master of all Scottish Rite bodies. So we have a lot of whistleblowers who have left Freemasonry, Jim Shaw being one of them, just as we have whistleblowers from the CIA exposing the assassination politics of the CIA, which is not pro-America, which is pro-Zionist to the nth degree. Albert Pike made his mark before the war in Arkansas as a lawyer and writer, but as a Confederate brigadier general, he was, according to the Arkansas Democrat of July 31st, 1978, a complete washout. Not a hero. Okay, what does washout mean? How about traitor? How about Illuminatus? How about agent of the Rothschilds? A washout is such a vague term. So you're not going to get any facts from the Arkansas Democrat. A little bit of displeasure, maybe. Albert Pike is the only Confederate general with a statue on federal property in Washington, D.C. He was honored not as a commander or even as a lawyer, but as a Southern regional leader of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. The statue stands on a pedestal near the foot of the Capitol Hill between the Department of Labor building and the Municipal building, between 3rd and 4th Streets on D Street Northwest. More detail about the monument, including a photo and map on the right. There is a photograph here. Further background on the colorful history of the statue can be found at the Masonic Info website. During the 1992 presidential campaign, oh, this is a LaRouche document. Okay, now I'm understanding where they're coming from. The LaRouche organization is both anti-Zionist, but it's also multicultural. They hate racism, but yet they tolerate Jewish racism. Rarely will they accuse the Jews of racism. Well, because the Jews are behind the global amalgamation project, that is white genocide. So they must support the Jews in the amalgamation project. So the LaRouche organization has a real problem here. Do you support white genocide or don't you? I mean, you can support amalgamation and not realize that it's causing white genocide. That's pretty stupid, though. Any support for amalgamation is, in fact, support of white genocide, because it's a conscious program of the international Jew to breed out the white race from off the earth. That's what it is. And if you don't understand that, you're pretty ignorant. But the LaRouche organization has this stance. They're anti-racist, which means they're playing along with the Jews with white genocide. And I don't understand how these people can't see it. You know, I mean, these writers for the LaRouche organization are very intellectual. The statue stands on a pedestal near the foot of Capitol Hill, blah, blah, blah. During the 1992 presidential campaign, Lyndon H. LaRouche and his vice presidential running mate, the Reverend James Bevel, launched a mobilization to remove the statue of General Albert Pike from Washington, D.C.'s Judiciary Square. So there was already an attempt to remove the statue by the LaRouches. Very interesting. I wonder if they'd be inclined to do that again and invite Black Lives Matter and Antifa to help pull the statue down. I'm sure this attempt was resisted by the Freemasons and by the Washington elite. On February 1, the campaign drew an angry attack from Freemasonic leader C. Fred Kleinknecht, Black Knight. That's interesting. That's a German name, Kleinknecht, which actually means Black Knight, who attempted to, or I'm sorry, it means small knight. Kleinknecht means small knight, who attempted to defend both Pike and the Ku Klux Klan from LaRouche and Bevel's attack. A speech given by LaRouche defending his actions can be found here, and a speech by Anton Chaitkin entitled Why Albert Pike's Statue Must Fall can be found here. Well, maybe we can work with the LaRouches to get that statue torn down, because Albert Pike is a Satanist. Next heading. He's definitely not an American patriot. He was instrumental in causing the uncivil war, was a major secessionist in the South, and one of the men most responsible for the uncivil war. The Illuminati and Albert Pike is the next heading. Adam Weishaupt formed the Order of Perfectibilists on May 1, 1776, to this day celebrated as May Day throughout many Western countries, by communists, which later became known as the Illuminati, a secret society whose name means enlightened ones, enlightened by Lucifer. Although the order was founded to provide an opportunity for the free exchange of ideas, which our universities are supposed to be, but they ban all right-wing speech, and they ban criticism of Jews, so much for the free exchange of ideas. Weishaupt's background as a Jesuit seems to have influenced the actual character of the society. Well, he became a Jesuit in order to learn the techniques of subversion, and then he applied them as an Illuminist, such that the express aim of this order became to abolish Christianity and overturn all civil government. This is absolutely correct. Let me repeat this. Weishaupt's background as a Jesuit seems to have influenced the actual character of the society, such that the express aim of this order became to abolish Christianity and overturn all civil government. Now, the reason the Freemasons were so easily manipulated was because the Freemasons at this point in time, I'm talking about the French Revolution and the era leading up to the so-called Enlightenment, was because the Freemasons were opposed to the aristocracy and to the Catholic Church and to the monarchy, because they saw correctly that the Holy Roman Empire under the Roman Catholic Church was an imperialistic oppressor. I mean, even Martin Luther said the Pope was the Antichrist. So they were not necessarily anti-reform, anti-reformists, but they were certainly anti-Roman. Now along comes the Illuminati, which changed the character of Freemasonry at the time to be totally anti-Christian, when at the time it was only anti-Catholic. So since they were already anti-Catholic, they could easily be manipulated to be anti-Christian. An Italian revolutionary leader, Giuseppe Mazzini, a 33rd degree Mason, was selected by the Illuminati to head their worldwide operations in 1834. Mazzini also founded the Mafia in 1860. Because of Mazzini's revolutionary activities in Europe, the Bavarian government cracked down on the Illuminati and other secret societies for allegedly plotting a massive overthrow of Europe's monarchies. As the secrets of the Illuminati were revealed, they were persecuted at, well, they weren't persecuted. The Illuminati were persecuting Christian civilization. They were hunted down, and rightfully so, and eventually disbanded, only to reestablish themselves in the depths of other organizations of which Freemasonry was one. So when the Illuminati goes underground, they don't dissolve. They simply find new rocks to hide under. During his leadership, Mazzini enticed Albert Pike into the now formally disbanded but still operating Illuminati. Pike was fascinated by the idea of a one-world government. Hello? Hello, one-world government? Okay, question from Jerbear. Not related to what you're addressing, but on my mind, if you can be answering, great. Why the Bible never mentions dinosaurs? Okay, well, actually they do. It's called Behemoth. The Bible does not contradict natural history. It's the interpretation of the Judeo-Christians that contradicts natural history. And we found actually there is a conspiracy between Judeo-Christians and evolutionists to bury the bones of giants, right? Even the Institute in Washington, D.C., has been covering up the evidence of giants. We've got photographs of like a six-foot person standing next to a femur of an ancient giant that was dug up. And that bone of the femur, which is a leg bone, is taller than the modern human. All right? So we have so much covering up of ancient history because even the so-called naturalists hate the Bible for reasons of their own. But the Judeo-Christians have so badly misinterpreted the Bible that they believe that the earth is only 6,000 years old, and that's balderdash. The Bible doesn't say that. In fact, many, not critics of the Bible, but people who have addressed these issues agree that the first two verses of the Bible leave it open as to how many thousands, perhaps even millions of years, it's the so-called gap theory, elapsed between the destruction of the old world and the replenishment of the new. And the geological record shows that there, before this current geological record, there are at least two layers that contain absolutely no fossils, but there were fossils in between the two, and there are fossils before the first one, which means that the Earth has withstood a tremendous catastrophe which virtually destroyed all life. And the Bible clearly says let them replenish the earth. Well, I mean, you don't replenish something that that wasn't replenished in the first place. Okay, so I could do a whole show on that. All right, and I'll get in touch with you later, Gerber, and show you the evidence that I have on Anglo-Saxon Israel about this. But good question. So let's get back to our subject for today. And okay, all right, so I see there have been several attempts to call in while I was distracted, and none of them seem to have worked, which is, you know, like I said, we'll keep on working on this problem and try to get it rectified. So let's see. Area code 447, are you with us? Hello, area code 447. Okay, that that number just disconnected. All right, let's keep moving on here. So we see that Mazzini and Pike, both Illuminati agents, both direct employees of the Rothschilds, were fascinated with the idea of a one-world government. Now, the Rothschilds created the United Nations. They created the League of Nations. That's all Jewish, folks. It's all Jewish. Jewish money, Jewish brains, Jewish revolutionaries, etc., have gone into creating the United Nations. And it is not an organization of peace. It is an organization of imperialism. The Jews have been using the United Nations to rule over the world. It's pretty obvious. There have been more wars after the creation of the United Nations than there were before. There has been nothing but war. The Bible says, beware of those who say peace, peace, when there is no peace. Because the United Nations is not interested in peace. It's only interested in dictatorship. Absolute dictatorship by Jewish money. Mystery Babylon, the eighth beast of the book of Revelation, the one world government. The world empire of merchants. It's very clear this is what the Bible teaches. All right. So, well, after this one world government idea became fascinated Pike, and when he was asked by Mazzini, readily agreed to write a ritual tome that guided the transition from the average high-ranking Mason into a top-ranking Illuminati Mason, 33rd degree. Since Mazzini also wanted Pike to head the Illuminati's American chapter, he clearly felt Pike was worthy of such a task. Mazzini's intention was that once a Mason had made his way up the Freemasonic ladder and proven himself worthy, the highest-ranking members would offer membership to the secret society within a secret society. Okay, remember Benjamin Franklin said that the Jews, wherever they are, comprise a state within a state. A state within a state. They never assimilate. It is for this reason that most Freemasons vehemently deny the evil intentions of their fraternity. Since the vast majority never reach the 30th degree, they would not be aware of the real purpose behind Masonry. It's always good to have a bunch of dupes. to do your bidding unwittingly. When instructing Pike how the tome should be developed, Mazzini wrote the following to Pike in a letter dated January 22, 1870. Remember that Freemasonry wasn't started by Pike. Well, thank you. Well, yeah, it wasn't started by Pike. Neither was the Ku Klux Klan. Rather, it was infiltrated by the Illuminati, who were looking for a respectable forum in which to hide their clandestine activities. Well said. We must allow all the federations to continue just as they are. He's talking about Freemason federations and other secret societies as well. With their systems, their central authorities, and their diverse modes of correspondence between high grades of the same right, organized as they are at the present. So in other words, we just let them continue as they are. But we must create a super right, which will remain unknown, to which we will call those Masons of high degree whom we shall select. With regard to our brothers in Masonry, these men must be pledges to the strictest secrecy. Through this supreme right, We will govern all Freemasonry, which will become the one international center, the more powerful because its direction will be unknown. In other words, rare is the Freemason who understands that he's working for the Jews. And as General Cornwallis predicted when he surrendered to George Washington, he said, within 200 years, your country will become a Jewish vassal state. Within 200 years, and voila. After Mazzini's death on March 11th, 1872, Pike appointed Adriano Lemmy, another 33-degree Mason, a banker from Florence, Italy, to run their, and now we're talking about the mafia, to run their subversive activities in Europe. Lemmy was a supporter of patriot and revolutionary Giuseppe Garibaldi and may have been active in the Luciferian Society founded by Pike. Lemmy, in turn, was succeeded by Lenin and Trotsky and then by Stalin. The revolutionary activities of all these men were financed by British, French, German, and American international bankers, i.e. Jews, all of them dominated by the House of Rothschild. Thank you very much. You are listening to the Restoration Hour here at freedomslips.com. Please avail yourself of the opportunity of going to the main website and clicking on the donate button and keep this freedom of speech organ, radio station, alternative news source on the air. As you all know, the Jews are trying to clamp down on freedom of speech and trying to silence anyone who would bring up the Jewish question. They're trying their damnedest. And I encourage all these organizations who have filed suit against the SPLC and the ADL for their subversive activities here in America. They're the real hate groups. By the way, there is no legal definition of hate speech or hate group. So this is the SPLC taking it upon itself to smear anyone they choose and call them white supremacists merely because they oppose gay marriage or abortion or anything else that upholds the biblical morality, which should be more proof to you that the Jews are not biblical Israelites. They are antichrists. So if you appreciate hearing the truth for a change, because you're not going to hear it on mainstream media, please go to the main website and donate to freedomslips.com. Let's continue, folks. So we see we have all of these Jew communists, but I don't believe Pike and Lemmy were Jews, but certainly Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin were Jews, and so was Adam Weishaupt, the first Illuminatus. So it's basically a combine of Jews and Freemasons to subvert Western civilization through banking, through money, and through communist revolution. Between 1859 and 1871, Pike worked out a military blueprint for three world wars and various revolutions throughout the world, which he considered would forward the conspiracy to its final stage in the 20th century. Of course, the three world wars, the third one is just about to start. And it was predicted that the third world war would be between Christianity and Islam. How do you think that's going, folks? In addition to the Supreme Council in Charleston, South Carolina, Pike established the Supreme Councils in Rome, London, and Berlin. He set up 23 subordinate councils in strategic places throughout the world, including five Grand Central Directories in Washington, D.C., Montevideo, Naples, Calcutta, and Mauritius in Africa, which were used to gather information. All of these branches have been the secret headquarters for the Illuminati's activities ever since. Let's see if we can take this call. Okay, area code 864. We're trying, folks. We're trying. Okay, it appears that we just can't connect with these people. I'll try to bring him in. He's calling again. He or she is calling again. And let me try bringing the caller in directly. See if that works. Sometimes that works. No, it won't acknowledge a number. So, folks, I don't know what to tell you. It's just I can't take phone calls. I can only take Skype calls. So if you want to get on Skype for the time being, this is just how we're going to have to do it. If you get a Skype account, you can call me via Skype. But I just can't accept phone calls. It's not working. So now you've gotten a lowdown on the Illuminati and Albert Pike and the fact that mainstream media is utterly worthless because it's all Jew propaganda designed to exterminate the white race. It creates libtards, white students that go to Jew-controlled colleges, Illuminati-controlled colleges, Freemasonry-controlled colleges, and turns them into anti-white activists. Kind of like the Janissaries that the, Muslims did it in the Middle Ages. They would kidnap white children and train them to be soldiers and use them in the front lines when they attacked Europe. It's the same thing, same principle. By brainwashing white people in the colleges, they turned them into communists, antichrists, and anti-Americans. And they joined such groups as Antifa and, well, they support Black Lives Matter. Actually, Black Lives Matter is pretty racist. They don't accept white people. All right. Some more information about Albert Pike. All right. Now we're getting into some real serious conspiracy documentation. Albert Pike, born on December 29th, U.S. lawyer, historian, general, Masonic author. Brigadier General, Confederate Army, died in 1891. Well-known Masonic author of Morals and Dogma and composer of the Ritual of the Concordant Body, the Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdiction, he was elected Sovereign Grand Commander of that body in 1859, an office he held until his death. Appointed Grand Orator of the Grand Lodge of Arkansas on November 7, 1864, this is during the Civil War, from 1853 onward he was, at various times, chairman of numerous committees and boards, as well as grand representative of four jurisdictions. Founder of the Ku Klux Klan. No, again, that's not true. See also, blah, blah, blah. Albert Pike addressing the 23 Supreme Council of the World on July 14, 1899. Quote, to you, Sovereign Grand Instructors General, we say this, that you may repeat it to the brethren of the 32nd, 31st, and 30th degrees. The Masonic religion should be, by all of us initiates of the high degrees, maintained in the purity of Luciferian doctrine. Albert Pike's mission was to further the cause of slavery and to foster a United States Civil War, exactly as I've been telling you. I don't know what this site is. I would say just browse for Albert Pike. And all kinds of information will come up online, information you will not find in any library or in any mainstream publication. And to, let me start this sentence over because this is absolutely true. Albert Pike's mission was to further the cause of slavery and to foster a United States Civil War and to establish a line of communication with other fellow Illuminati. Albert Pike founded the Knights of the Golden Circle. Although I don't think he founded them directly, the Knights of the Golden Circle were definitely an offshoot of the Freemasons, who were, as I just quoted earlier, founded by B'nai B'rith, by Jews. And the Jews brag about their control of Freemasonry. So, he was chosen by Caleb Cushing, who was an agent of the Rothschilds, who was observing and reporting to the Rothschilds on the activities of the northern Rothschild people, that is the abolitionists, and the southern Rothschild people, namely the secessionists, and integrating the activities of both sides. That's what Caleb Cushing's job was, to make sure both sides are cooperating or following the instructions of the Rothschilds with the radical abolitionists following the British Rothschilds and the secessionists following the instructions of the French Rothschilds. And I quote it to you from the letter of Solomon Rothschild. He was also on the scene observing and making sure the Rothschild plan was being implemented as well as possible. He was chosen by Caleb Cushing to head the Illuminati branch in New Orleans and to establish a new world order. Albert Pike moved his law office to New Orleans in 1853 and was made Masonic Special Deputy of the Supreme Council of Louisiana on April 25, 1857. Albert Pike and, guess who, Judah Benjamin, needed a secret society in order to meet and communicate their plans to foster a civil war in the United States. Now remember, they both came from the North. Albert Pike from Harvard and Benjamin from Yale, where they were obviously instructed as to Rothschild's plans for dividing the country into two opposing camps, because the Rothschilds were utterly fearful that the United States of America would create a republic that they could overthrow militarily. See, because they overthrew any European power at will by fomenting war against them. So if any power on the European continent challenged the Rothschilds could instantly buy an army, instantly corrupt a country and use their military to attack a rebel nation. So they were using the same tactics here in America, but they had to divide America in two in order to take control of America. So the Illuminati's plan to establish a new world order control over the United States Republic. Judah Benjamin's mentor was John Slidell, whose niece married August Belmont, connected to the Rothschild Bank. All right, so they marry each other. They keep it close to home. Judah Benjamin's connection to John Slidell further connected Benjamin to European banking in order to fund the Confederacy. Judah Benjamin was already a Rothschild agent, but once the Civil War got underway, the South had run short of money very early. And so they printed Confederate notes, which were easily counterfeited. So were the greenbacks. And there was a hyperinflation of these Confederate notes. So they needed real money. They needed bonds to bring foreign money in to finance the Southern war effort. And so this was John Slidell's job. It should be noted that after the United States Civil War, Judah P. Benjamin fled to England and was the only member of the Confederacy never to return to the United States. Judah Benjamin became legal advisor to Queen Victoria. Both Louisiana Senator John Slidell and Judah P. Benjamin belonged to both the Boston and Union Clubs of New Orleans. Again, we see that these Northerners, or these Rothschild agents, came from the North into the South in order to foment secession. However, these two clubs did not provide the secrecy needed to communicate. It is for this reason Albert Pike, Judah Benjamin, and John Slidell founded the Mystic Crew of Comus. The Mystic Crew of Comus actually is the founder of the New Orleans parades, Mardi Gras. The Mystic Crew of Comus, the Mardi Gras parades were founded by these three men, and nobody knows about it. Because why? Shh. You're not supposed to mention their names. You're not supposed to talk about this stuff. Both Albert Pike and Judah P. Benjamin were secret kings of the Mystic Crew of Comus. Both Albert Pike and Judah Benjamin participated directly in the killing of the United States President Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln became a threat to the House of Rothschild when he began having the United States government print its own greenback currency. It should be noted that Albert Pike, after the Civil War, was indicted and sent to prison for treason by the United States government. After Abraham Lincoln's assassination, Andrew Johnson, vice president, became the United States president and pardoned Albert Pike, as we found out from the previous article. Albert Pike awarded Andrew Johnson for this pardon, the 33rd degree rite of passage. I think this is all honorary. And as I told you earlier, I believe that Johnson may have been threatened to issue this pardon. Quotes by Pike. The First World War must be brought about in order to permit the Illuminati to overthrow the power of the Tsars in Russia and of making that country a fortress of atheistic communism. Did this happen, folks? Albert Pike ought to know, as head of the Illuminati, he would be privy to all Rothschild plans. Or not, maybe not all, but the ones that the Rothschilds wanted him to implement. And we know that the secret societies were involved in all the revolutions in Europe, in the overthrow of the monarchies, which was the intention of the Rothschilds from the very beginning. So while lending money to these various monarchies and having intelligence on all these countries with their through their agents, at the same time they were planning their destruction. And none of these European monarchs suspected it. Certainly Napoleon became aware of Jewish subversion and skullduggery, and he denounced the Jews many times once he found out that the Jews were lending money to his country as well as to the other countries during the Napoleonic Wars. He woke up when he saw that. So, what has happened, folks? The Tsars of Russia were overthrown, and atheistic, well, it's not atheistic, it's Judeo-communism. That's just another ruse. It's called atheistic communism so that you would be thrown off the track and not realize it is Judeo-communism. The divergences caused by the Agentur, that is, agents of the Illuminati, between the British and Germanic empires, will be used to foment this war. At the end of the war, communism will be built and used in order to destroy the other governments and in order to weaken the religions. It's European history written before it happened. The Second World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences between the fascists and the Zionists. Who are the fascists? Well, they're nationalists. So here we see what happened. World War II. This war must be brought about so that Nazism or fascism is destroyed, and it has been virtually destroyed, certainly on a governmental scale, but we see it returning on the lower levels, white nationalists becoming sick and tired of their nations being destroyed by proxy immigration war. I mean, white people aren't totally stupid. We can see when our country is being overrun by Arabs and blacks and Turks, etc., etc., and they're usually of military age, who are raping, murdering, and destroying Europe, that something is wrong. And they're beginning to fight back. The Jews want a race war. And they're getting it. They have hedged their bets that white people won't be able to fight back strongly enough because they control the military installations and the governments of all white nations. They absolutely control all white nations through their money operations. And they have subversive communists in all these nations that are turning the country into welfare states and giving money away to these immigrants so that they can be insurgents, rebels, destroyers. White people are beginning to figure this out. So we'll see how far this attempt to destroy white nations goes. So the Second World War would be the fight between fascism and Zionism. The Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the Agentur of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. Jewslam. Both sides are working for the Rothschilds. Both sides are working for the Rothschilds, just as I've been telling you, the uncivil war. Both sides were working for the Rothschilds. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism mutually destroy each other. At least that's what he was told. Certainly the Jews intend for Zionism to reign supreme. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to, and probably he was told that Freemasonry will come out on top. No, I don't think so. I think Zionism will triumph over Freemasonry according to the Rothschild plan. Here it shows that even Albert Pike could be misled. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economic exhaustion, a la the protocols of the elders of Zion. We shall unleash the nihilists. These words are taken right from the protocols, even before the protocols were written. So obviously, because our intelligence tells us the protocols were written in 1896. So this very phrase, we shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, is in the protocols. So this language existed before the protocols were set to pen and paper. Obviously part of the Illuminati plan, which Albert Pike is privy to. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm. Guess what, folks? That's the word people are using, cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, that is the effects of absolute Judaism, origin of savagery, and of the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere, the citizens obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries will exterminate those destroyers of civilization and the multitude disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits, he says, will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer. That is Judaism. So we're given here Albert Pike's understanding of this final war in which the nihilists, well, what about Black Lives Matter? What about Antifa? What about the Islamic terrorists? Do you think they're committed Islamicists or are they paid revolutionaries? What do you think? This is war against the white race by proxy, financed by the Rothschilds. This is what's happening, folks. It's predicted right here in the writings of Albert Pike to the extent of his understanding. You know, the Rothschilds aren't going to tell him everything. And we, with hindsight and understanding what's going on in the world today, can see where he's wrong and where he's right. But definitely, the nihilists and the atheists have been unleashed from the universities, the Jew-controlled universities, the pro-abortion, pro-gay, pro-transgender, pro-this, pro-that, everything that's degenerate in the world is being promoted by these Jew-controlled universities. The nihilists and the atheists have been unleashed upon the world. And I can say this, one good thing about this is they're a very small minority. They do not represent the true feelings of the American people or true Europeans. But there are so many of our people that are utterly duped into believing that all this amalgamation is a good thing, that they might as well be atheists and nihilists. But they're not going to be on the front lines. They're going to be the victims. They're going to be caught in the crosshairs and in the crossfire between white nationalists and Judeo-communists. That's the true nature of the battle. This is a battle between white nationalists and Judeo-communists. I hope you appreciate today's lesson. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Join the Sacred Matrix with hosts Janet Kirilesan and Dr. Sasha Lesson, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio.
Here we free ourselves from the God spell, transform the perverted matrix to the divine one. We become conscious and we embrace universal unlimited love.
We feature colorful guests and topics such as extraterrestrials, ghosts, interdimensionals, and aliens. We examine evidence, anomalies, archaeological ruins, and anthropology.
We explore past lives, future lives, life between lives. We get into astral projection, near-death experiences, archetypes, visions, and dreams.
Episodes include time travel, teleportation, counseling, spirituality, tantra, relationships, peace, shamanism, peak experiences, and ego transcendence.
Join the lessons Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com for The Sacred Matrix, a divine paradigm of love.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it!